أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين. اللهم اخرجنا من ظلمات الوهم وأكرمنا بنور الفهم، اللهم افتح علينا أبواب رحمتك وانشر علينا من خزائن علومك يا أرحم الراحمين. اللهم علمنا ما ينفعنا وانفعنا بما علمتنا وزدنا علما. Brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. The tides had finally turned in Arabia. Rasulullah had ended the battle of the Confederates of the trench of Khandaq with the words, Al-an naghzuhum wa la yaghzunana. It is now us who pursue them. It is not they who pursue us. And so Rasulullah was pondering over how he was going to initiate the tactical revolution in which he finally is able to go and preach the word of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to the wider people of Arabia and of the world. Because if you remember, at the beginning of this series, we spoke about the power of Quraysh and that all the people and all these tribes had treaties with Quraysh. لِإِلَافِ قُرَيْشِ وَالنَّاسْ كُلُّهُمْ تَبَعٌ لِقُرَيْشِ. People all follow Quraysh. Rasulullah, although he had many problems with other tribes who would come and provoke him and try to hurt him, he could never deal with them because his priority was always Quraysh. Now finally Quraysh have been defeated militarily. Yet Rasulullah wanted to force them into negotiations in a way in which he could make peace with Quraysh whilst Quraysh saves face and keeps its reputation, so that he may in peace speak to the people of Arabia and of the world about Islam. So he pondered over a way in which to do this. And he had a dream. In the sixth year after Hijrah, Rasulullah has a dream of him walking in the Kaaba with the Muslims with their heads shaved and in the state of Ihram. He wakes up that night, so joyous. And the next morning, he gathers the Muslims and tells them, I have had a dream in which we will go and we will do tawaf around the Kaaba. Those muhajirin who have not been back in Mecca for 6 years, have not seen their families, their homes, their homeland, all they ever knew that they grew up with, they couldn't believe it. They were so ecstatic. Is this going to be true? Rasulullah says, it's true and it will happen inshallah. It is the promise of Allah. They're so happy and the Prophet says to everyone, get your things ready, because we're going to go on a journey to Mecca now. This is where everyone was taken by surprise. Even the people outside of Medina, the people who were not Muslims within Medina, and the Muslims themselves were surprised that we're going to Mecca now. And the Prophet says, gather all your animals. Gather a cargo of animals that we will take for sacrifice. So everyone knows, we are not going for war, but we are going for peaceful purposes. We are going to do tawaf around the Kaaba. Everyone put your weapons in bags. Do not carry your weapons on you. Let everyone see you in a peaceful state. Some people thought this was truly the end of the Muslims. How could they even think to go and face Quraysh without weapons, thinking they'll be allowed inside the Haram? This was the issue. If they entered into the Haram, then من دخل فيها كان آمنا. Whoever goes into the Haram is safe. The Quraysh built a reputation around creating a sanctuary and around making sure that whoever was to enter into Mecca felt safe and secure and there would be no bloodshed in that land. This is the Haram. This was a sacred sanctuary even for their idols. Rasulullah decided that the Muslims would make their way there. And so they set on their way, about a 2 week journey to get to Mecca. And as they would walk, they would recite Labbaik Allahumma Labbaik in their clothes of Ihram. And other tribes would see them and see and spread word around Arabia that this is what Rasulullah, this is what Muhammad ibn Abdullah is doing. And some would say Rasulullah, some are becoming Muslims now, seeing the miracles that this man was performing. Meanwhile, Quraysh, they hear about this and they're devastated. and chaos ensues amongst the chiefs of the tribes. What's he trying to do? What's Muhammad up to now? Is he trying to humiliate us? Is he trying to mock us? We must not allow him to enter the haram. If he comes into the haram, we have a massive problem on our hands. So they designate a group of warriors, hundreds of warriors led by Khalid ibn Walid. Khalid ibn Walid was a strong personality, the son of Walid ibn Mughira, the one who would be an antagonist to Rasulullah throughout the early years of the mission of Islam. And so Walid takes his warriors and they set out 20 kilometers away from Mecca, waiting for Rasulullah to approach. They were going to stop him in his tracks. Of course, the Prophet always had messengers he would send to go ahead, as he did in Badr, as he did in several different instances. And they would report back to him. And this time they told him, when they came back, "Ya Rasulullah, we have seen Khalid bin Walid camp with several warriors from Quraysh waiting for us to approach." And so Rasulullah says, "Ah, Quraysh, war has truly eaten them from within." So the Prophet decides that he will take a different route. He asks the Muslims, "Who here knows of the back routes?" And so he gathers a group of the Muslims in order to lead their way through the back roads, a very mountainous area, difficulty. They are walking under the sun in sandals over these rocks with their animals. It's a very difficult journey. People don't think about the journeys Rasulullah took as much, although his journeys, this amounted to everyone who was on this journey had bleeding feet after the end of the journey, because it was so difficult to get around this mountainous area. Yet they made their way around until they reached the haram from a different route, a back route, not the mainstream route. It took longer for them and it was difficult for them. Yet they reached an area in the haram where there was a tree that was bent over. This was known as Al-Hudaybiyah. This area was known as Al-Hudaybiyah. And this is where the Muslims settled. They settled in Hudaybiyah. As the Muslims settled, news reached Quraysh that the Muslims had arrived in the haram and they are in Hudaybiyah. And now Quraysh had to think about what they were going to do. They were in confusion. They were not going to allow him to come to visit the Kaaba. They were deciding, how would they deal with him? Was it worth it to go and fight him now? What would happen? What was going to be the result of this situation? A tribe by the name of Khuza'a, who we spoke about in the beginning of the series, they had a treaty with the grandfather of Rasulullah. They decided, "Let us go to Hudaybiyah, ya Quraysh. Let us go and speak to him." And so Khuza'a went and spoke to Rasulullah. He told him, "Ya Rasulullah, ya Muhammad, why are you here? What's happening now? What are you planning?" And Rasulullah tells him, "I come in peace. I come in complete peace. I want nothing except to do tawaf with the Muslims around the Kaaba. And I have brought my animals here, this cargo, as sacrifice. And we have no weapons with us. Just let us in." Here, Rasulullah was giving them two options basically. Either you let me in, or you have to come and negotiate with me. And he wanted them to negotiate with him. And so Khuza'a, they went back. They said to them, "Do you want to hear what Muhammad has to say?" They said, "We don't want to hear what he has to say. If he didn't leave, then we still have a problem. He should know what we have to say. He cannot come in no matter what." While Rasulullah wasn't leaving, a man by the name of Urwa, he came from a respected tribe. He told Quraysh, "Allow me to intervene. Let me go and let me try to speak to him. Perhaps I can talk sense to him." So Urwa goes to speak to Rasulullah. As he approaches, he sees the Muslims, the way in which they would do wudu from the leftover water that the Prophet would wash his hands with. They would see their discipline. They would see how they would not speak unless he would allow them to. He would see as the Muslims the discipline that he had not seen anywhere else. So he came and he spoke to Rasulullah, impressed by this man. And the Prophet tells him the same thing, "I have only come to visit the Kaaba and do tawaf." So Urwa returns and tells them, "Ya Quraysh, listen to this man. He has no weapons and he has come with a cargo of animals, and all he wants to do is tawaf. Just let him do tawaf and you can get rid of him." Again, the Quraysh were not going to accept. He said, I have not seen a king like this. I have met Najashi and I have met the Caesar of Rome, but I have not seen disciples surround him the way these people are surrounding him. Just let him come in. They wouldn't accept. Quraysh then decided to send in one of their warriors with his group of men, known as Hulais. As Hulais was going to see Rasulullah, the Muslims told him, "Ya Rasulullah, Hulais is approaching." The Prophet knew Hulais and he says, "Hada min al-muta'allihin." This man, he's a godly man. He respects sacred artifacts. He respects sacred sentiments. And he even respects the Kaaba. He will respect what we're coming for. So he says, "Release the animals." The Muslims then release the animals and the animals all run in front of Hulais. Hulais sees the animals and stops and sees. Rasulullah tells him, "We have only come to do tawaf and sacrifice these animals. This is a sacred ritual." And so Hulais sees this and he says, "Well, should you be let in then?" And Rasulullah says, "Yes, that's what I've been trying to say." So Hulais decides to return. Every single person that has come to Rasulullah, Rasulullah has figured a way to send them back. Hulais returns to Quraysh and tells them, "How could you not let this man in? He has come for the Haram, he has come for the Kaaba, just like any other visitor, any other pilgrim. How could you reject a pilgrim?" Quraysh now were in utter confusion. Some were saying, "What should we do now? What should we not do now? Should we let him or not?" Rasulullah sent a message with Hulais. At this time, after the Quraysh had sent several messengers, Rasulullah decided now is the time to reveal his intention. Hulais passes the message to Quraysh, and the message is that we seek a ceasefire, a 10-year ceasefire, and we will lift the sanctions, and the road to Sham will be open, and you can take your caravans to Sham. Once the Quraysh hear this, Rasulullah wants to open the roads. And after they had failed militarily, what do they have to lose right now except their animosity? Rasulullah wanted to give them at least their dignity to save face so that he doesn't face any animosity afterwards, even though they had animosity growing within and hatred within, that they couldn't come and stand in his way and have something against him after he opens the road up, just so he can speak to the Muslims, so we can speak to the people of Arabia, so we can speak about Islam. Once Hulais tells them this, they send a man by the name of Suhail. When Suhail comes to the Hudaybiyah, comes to see Rasulullah, and this is the most important event perhaps in the life of Rasulullah, it is very underestimated what occurs afterwards. As Suhail approaches, the Muslims, they tell Rasulullah, "Ya Rasulullah, Suhail is approaching." And then the Prophet Muhammad says, "Lanat Quraysh." Quraysh has finally been dealt with. They finally have relaxed themselves. They have brought their negotiator. Suhail approaches the Prophet and says, "Ya Muhammad, why have you come?" He says, "I have come only to visit the Kaaba and do tawaf around the Kaaba. That's my request." So Suhail says, "Very well. We will allow you to do tawaf if you hold your end of the ceasefire of opening the ways to Sham so that we may take our caravans." The Prophet says, "I accept." But he says, "But on conditions." Suhail tells him, "We have conditions." Rasulullah says, "What are your conditions?" And here, this is when the Muslims begin to get angry and agitated, and their discipline breaks, because Suhail almost mocks them with his negotiations, with his conditions. So he says to him, "The first condition is that you do not enter and visit the Kaaba this year. You come back next year." This was very hard for the Muslims to accept. The Prophet said, "I accept." Then he told him, "And when you come back next year, you can only stay for 3 days." The Prophet said, "I accept." He said, "Very well." Suhail then said, "And those in Mecca who become Muslim, they can't go and live with you in Medina. No longer can you take Muslims to Medina. They remain here." The Prophet says, "I accept as long as you allow them to practice their religion." Suhail says, accepted. And finally, if there is anyone in Medina of the Muslims that decides to come and stay with us and leave Islam and wants to come back to Quraysh, you must let them. So Rasulullah says, of course, I accept this too. The Muslims felt that, what's happening? Why is Rasulullah accepting everything? And then Umar ibn al-Khattab begins to speak out. Infuriated, he raises his voice in front of the Muslims and raises his voice to Rasulullah and he says, Alasta bin Abi? Are you not a prophet? And Rasulullah says, of course I am. I am Nabiullah. Then he says, are we not the Muslims, the righteous ones? And Rasulullah says, yes, we are the righteous. He says, then why are we paying for our religion? Why are you accepting everything that they're saying? And the Muslims begin to be riled up. And chaos ensues between them. And then Umar begins to speak to them and say, is he not the Prophet? And are we not the Muslims? Are we not on the right path? Until Abu Bakr gets involved and says, Ya Umar, Ya Rajul, be quiet. What are you doing? Speaking up to Rasulullah in this way. Abu Bakr began to calm Umar down. Rasulullah began to calm the Muslims down. As he tried to make the Muslims settle, because he had been just accepting to all of Suhail's conditions, and what was left now was just to write it down, a young boy, 16 years old, runs towards Hudaybiyah. His name was Abu Jandal. He runs to Hudaybiyah, and he runs to Rasulullah, and he hugs him. Rasulullah hugs this young boy. He says, Ya Rasulullah, I am a Muslim, and I have been trapped in Mecca this whole time, and I beg of you to take me with you back to Medina. I don't want to be amongst the Quraysh. Here, the hearts of the Muslims was piercing them even more. Rasulullah felt sorry for Abu Jandal, so he looked at Suhail and said, Ya Suhail, allow me to take just this boy with me. Suhail says, no. He says, Suhail, just for me, as a token of our agreement. Suhail says, no. If you take this boy, there is no treaty of Hudaybiyah. This was very difficult for the Prophet, but he knelt down and he said, Ya Abu Jandal, I understand you're going through a very difficult time. I need you to sacrifice for us right now. I need you to be patient for us. This is of the greatest moments for the Muslims. We need to do this for Islam and for Allah. Be patient in Quraysh. Be patient in Mecca for now. Abu Jandal was crying. Suhail tells Rasulullah, bring Abu Jandal back. Again, Umar was trying to rile up the Muslims. So he comes to Abu Jandal. As Rasulullah goes and negotiates with Suhail, and Suhail was taking Abu Jandal back. Abu Jandal's on the side. Umar comes to Abu Jandal and gives him a knife and says, Ya Abu Jandal, go and stab this Suhail and come back with us to Medina. Abu Jandal looks at Umar, the 16-year-old boy, and says, why wouldn't you do it? Why don't you do it? You're telling me to do it? And Umar says, because Rasulullah has told us not to kill anyone. So Abu Jandal says, well, I follow Rasulullah too, so I won't kill anyone. And this was a great moment. Abu Jandal literally saved the Muslims who were present in Hudaybiyah from falling into battle and saved the Treaty of Hudaybiyah, which would be one of the greatest victories for Rasulullah. He did a great service for us and for Islam on that day. Again, now, Suhail tells Rasulullah, bring the boy back. Muhammad sallallahu alayhi Rasulullah tells Abu Jandal, be patient for now. Abu Jandal eventually, he escapes from Mecca, but he doesn't go to Medina. So the responsibility is not on Rasulullah. He goes to another town where the Muslims began to escape to, and they would be later on bandits who would stop the roads of the caravan of Quraysh. So Quraysh, they shot themselves in the foot with that one. In any case, Suhail then decides now is the time to write the treaty down. So Rasulullah calls for Imam Ali alayhi salam. Uthman, he had been the one to go with Hulais back into Mecca with the message that he had sent down. Uthman and Imam Ali, they were the sons of Abd Munaf, the great-great-grandfather. Uthman was of Bani Umayyah. and Imam Ali was of Banu Hashim. They were both of greater tribes. Umar had been asked at the time to take the message to Quraysh. But Umar said, Ya Rasulullah, if I go into Quraysh, I don't have a strong clan. Although he's from Quraysh, he doesn't have a strong clan within Quraysh. But Uthman did. Uthman has Bani Umayyah behind him. So Uthman was the one who went with Hulais and gave the message to Quraysh. And he had been there for a few days. He was safe. Uthman was safe in Mecca. Imam Ali alayhi salam now was the only, was that one, the son of Abd Manaf, of prestigious lineage, who would write the treaty between Suhail and Rasulullah, between Quraysh and Rasulullah. And so Rasulullah chose Imam Ali alayhi salam to write the treaty. And so he told the Imam, Ya Ali, write. And the Imam Ali alayhi salam begins to write. He says, Ya Ali, write. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So as Imam Ali writes, Bismillah, at that moment, Suhail tells him, stop. Who is this ar-Rahman ar-Rahim? I don't recognize any ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I don't believe in any ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So the Imam looks at him. The Prophet tells him, it's okay, Ali. Just write, Bismik Allahumma. Suhail accepts. So Ali wrote, Bismik Allahumma, in your name, O Lord, without saying which Lord. The Prophet tells him, Ya Ali, write. This is a treaty between Suhail and Rasulullah. Imam Ali writes down, this is a treaty of Hudaybiyah, agreed upon by Suhail and Rasulullah. As he's writing, Suhail says, nope, who is Rasulullah? I don't recognize Rasulullah. If you want this treaty, you have to rub that out, erase that writing. The Imam looks at him and says, no, I will not erase Rasulullah. So the man says, you will erase Rasulullah or there's no treaty. And so Imam Ali alayhi salam says to him, Wallah, I will not erase the name of Rasulullah min rughmi anfik, whether you like it or not. I'm not going to erase the name of Rasulullah. And here the Muslims began to be ignited in their anger and in the way that they were feeling hard done by the Quraysh. The Prophet makes the Muslims calm down. He comes to Ali, he says, Ya Ali, I am Rasulullah and I am Muhammad ibn Abdullah. But don't worry. He takes it from him and Rasulullah erases his name on his own. Because Imam Ali had said, I won't. So he gives it back to Imam Ali. He says, write Muhammad ibn Abdullah. So the Imam sat down and wrote Muhammad ibn Abdullah. And they wrote the conditions of the treaty. Now the Muslims had to return. Suhail returns to Quraysh, having sent Rasulullah back to Medina. The Quraysh saw this as a victory. Yes, he didn't come in. People began to see this as a victory for the Quraysh. Some people in Arabia, when they heard about this, they thought that Rasulullah was declining and the Muslims were declining. What? He opened the pathway for Quraysh. Had he finally crumbled for the pressure? Did he crumble to the pressure of Quraysh finally? As they're coming back, again, those Muslims who were against Rasulullah in Hudaybiyah began to question him and his authority. And here, the famous verse came down. Surat Al-Fath descended in revelation upon Rasulullah. People think that Al-Fath came down in Mecca. But Mecca, the Fath of Mecca happened in the 8th year after Hijrah. Surat Al-Fath came down in the 6th year after Hijrah. It came down for the Treaty of Hudaybiyah. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sends the surah down and says to Rasulullah, as they journeyed on the way back to Medina, Inna fatahna laka fathan mubina. We have given you, granted for you, opened for you a great opening, given you a great victory. This victory of Hudaybiyah. At this moment, Umar questions once again for the final time. This is the fatah. Questioning this to be a victory in itself. And Rasulullah tells him, yes, Ya Umar, this is the fatah. Until Umar finally accepts and says, this is the fatah, O people. This is the fatah. Rasulullah turns back to Medina. People had thought that perhaps Islam was declining now. And so, those Jews that had joined the Confederate army in Khandaq, they had now decided perhaps now it was one of the best times to strike. Perhaps now, as the Muslims and their power is dwindling, we can now strike them once they are at their weakest. And so the Jewish tribes within Khaybar, different tribes who had left Medina of Banu Qaynaqa', Banu Nadir, and Banu Qurayda, after they had gathered with the Jewish tribes in Khaybar, they decided that now, at the time when Islam was at its weakest and Rasulullah and his mission is declining and he has opened the roads for Quraysh, so perhaps he is under great pressure, they would hire out different tribes and different bandits to go and provoke Rasulullah, often in Medina. The Prophet could never give priority to any other tribe provoking him because Quraysh was always in the way. Finally now, Quraysh was not in the way. On his way back from Medina, Rasulullah comes and finds that the Muslims had been attacked by a tribe known as Bani Ghatafan. They were rented out by the tribe of the Jews in Khaybar. They had killed the son of Abu Dharr, as well as kidnapping Abu Dharr's wife, who was retrieved by some of the Muslims in Medina. Rasulullah could never before retaliate to those who would provoke him and attack the Muslims, because Quraysh was always in the way. But now, he would attack. Now he could finally respond. And so he decides that all of those who were with him in Hudaybiyah, get yourselves ready for battle. We will now make our way to Khaybar. And so the Muslims became ready. Some of the hypocrites within Medina, they would write to the Jews and they would tell them, be ready. Muhammad is on his way to you. You are greater in number. There are only 1,500 strong. And you have enough with you now to finish Muhammad and his dwindling forces and his declining mission. Rasulullah didn't take the main route to get to Khaybar. He wanted to take them by surprise. Again, one of his usual tactics, he took the back routes and he arrived after this 96-mile journey that took them several days. He arrives with the Muslims in the nighttime. Unfortunately, Imam Ali alayhi salam in this time falls sick. His eyes, he could no longer see through. And so the Imam, wanting to still contribute to the army of the Muslims, he asks Rasulullah, can I still make something for the Muslims, do something for them? And so he decides that he will take the role of feeding the Muslims. So throughout the days, Imam Ali alayhi salam, with his eyes closed, he would bake bread. He would make bread and bake bread for the Muslim army. Rasulullah assembled his troops. Now, the way Khaybar was set out, as morning came, they realized that the Muslims were there and ready for battle. They had 8 castles, and they had huge gates in front of each castle, and they had a trench. And what they needed to do, just like the trench that was made around Medina at the time. So even if the gate was open, what needed to be done was a bridge would be laid out for anyone to enter through the trench, to enter into the village and enter into the castle. The Muslims right now would have to attack each castle one by one. Imam Ali alayhi salam would be making bread for the Muslims. Rasulullah would give the flag of the Muhajirin and the flag of the Ansar. And the Muslims went to battle. And they battled with the Jews within the first castle until that castle fell. And the Muslims conquered it. And they battled against the Jews in the second castle, and that castle fell. And the Jews would always retreat until they got to the 8th castle, because in the 8th castle was a man by the name of Marhab, a giant man, a giant Jewish warrior, the chief of the Jews. And he was the main line of defense that once they got to the 8th castle, no longer could they penetrate into the 8th gate. Whenever the Muslims and the Jews were battling outside of the castle, Marhab would emerge and he would scream, Ana Marhab, I am Marhab, and I have come for battle. And whoever stood in his way was killed immediately. The Muslims feared Marhab. When they returned to Rasulullah and told him of this man, the Prophet would then create special battalions to go and fight Marhad especially. So he says to Abu Bakr, "Ya Abu Bakr, come and take this flag and lead the Muslims, lead a group of warriors with you and go and fight Marhad." When Abu Bakr would go with the warriors to fight, Marhad would return them all. Abu Bakr returns and tells Rasulullah, "We couldn't fight him, Ya Rasulullah." And his brother Harith stands in front of him with his group of warriors. "We can't pierce their defense." So the Prophet calls for Umar and he says, "Ya Umar, take this flag and take a group of warriors with you and go and fight and defeat Marhab and conquer the 8th castle." Umar goes forward with the warriors, and instead of pushing the warriors back into the castle, the Muslims now are pushed back into their own camp. Rasulullah takes again the flag and he says, "Listen, all Muslims, there is one amongst you who will defeat Marhab. There is one amongst you who I will give my flag to." My flag, not the flag of the Muhajirin and not the flag of the Ansar. I will give him my flag, the flag of Rasulullah. And this man is the one who Allah loves and who his Prophet loves. And he loves Allah's Prophet and loves Allah. When Rasulullah was speaking in this way, it was almost as if he was passing the torch. Passing his flag, passing the torch. And they didn't know who it was, because this time Ali was not even in contention. Because Ali was sick, so who could it be? There are reports that that night, no one wanted to be chosen as much as that night. Because this was the greatest prestige, to be the one who holds Rasulullah's flag and be the one loved by the Prophet and by Allah, and be the one who will go to defeat Marhab, this giant of a warrior, not allowing anyone to take over the castle. That next morning, as they all stood in line, Rasulullah looks at them and says, "Go and call Ali." In confusion, a few men of the Muslims went. They told Imam Ali, "Ya Ali, Rasulullah needs you." So the Imam, without any question, he stands up and they take him by his arms, because his eyes are closed and he cannot see. And they take him to Rasulullah, and the Prophet says, "Ya Ali, how are your eyes? How are you feeling now?" And the Imam says, "Ya Rasulullah, I can't see through them. And all the Muslims are watching this." So Rasulullah puts his thumb onto his lips and takes his saliva and puts it over the eyes of the Imam. And the Imam opens his eyes and he can see as clear as day, never again to have any ailment with his eyes till the day he dies. And the Prophet says, "Ya Ali, I need you to go and fight this giant man, Marhab. Take the Dhulfiqar in your hand and take the helmet and take this flag." And he gives him the flag of Rasulullah. And the Imam takes this without any question, with hope in his heart and contentment that he is chosen by Rasulullah. And as he walks, he stops and he says, "Ya Rasulullah, what do you want me to fight him for? Give me your conditions." So the Prophet says, "Tell him, if they want to be Muslims, then we are brothers. Then they come back and live with us in Medina. And we protect them. If they don't want to be Muslims, then they have to live under the rule of Islam and pay taxes. And that is the retribution for what they have done. We won't kill them. We will protect them. And if they don't accept those two terms, then you can fight him, Ya Ali." And the narrations say, when the Imam receives this order, "You can fight him, Ya Ali," the Imam begins to run. He begins to charge towards the 8th castle with a group of warriors behind him. They charge towards the castle. Marhab knows someone's coming. He walks through the tunnels. He opens the gate and it closes behind him. Marhab comes forward. The Imam is charging. Those warriors with Harith, Marhab's brother, come and they fight the Muslims. The Imam looks towards Marhab in front of him, this giant man, and Marhab comes and says once again, as he said against all of them before him, "Ana Marhab, and I am ready for battle." The Imam approaches and says, "Ana alladhi sammathu ummuhu Haydara. I am the one whose mother called him Haidar, the lion. At this moment, Marhab stumbles. One foot retreats. He remembers a prophecy told to him in his younger years where he will be killed by the one named Haidar. Imam Ali alayhi salam charges. Marhab comes to fight the Imam, and Imam Ali strikes his sword onto the helmet of Marhab, splitting Marhab in two. The Imam goes from Marhab to every other warrior in his way and begins to fight them, not leaving anyone in his path. As the Muslims follow through and he runs to the gate, there's no way for the Muslims to enter into the castle, so Imam Ali alayhi salam, with one arm, grabs the gate of Khaybar and lifts it. The strength of 40 men in the one arm of Ali, as the Muslims shout Allahu Akbar, and the Imam uses the gate as the bridge for the Muslims to go over the trench and enter into the castle, not allowing anyone else to come and fight him. Whenever they would come, the Imam even took the door, the gate of Khaybar, and used it as a shield against those warriors. The Muslims took over the 8th castle. The prisoners were taken in. Imam Ali alayhi salam comes back to Rasulullah, not for glory, not for fame, only for Rasulullah and fi sabilillah. The Prophet looks smiling as the Imam returns with the flag of his Prophet. And he says, Ya Ali, Allah and his Prophet are content with you and are happy with you. And the Imam at this moment cries, this gentle soul, this brave warrior, yet gentle soul, cries and says, Allah is happy with me. Later on in the life of Imam Ali alayhi salam, as he's breaking a piece of bread, it was difficult for him to break it. And when he is asked, Ya Ali, you're the one who opened the gates of Khaybar on his own, you're having trouble with a piece of bread. And the Imam says, that was spiritual power. This was physical power. That was the power of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is the power of Ali. And who is Ali compared to Allah? Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi at-tayyibin al-tahirin.